So, Mog, thanks for agreeing to do an interview with us at Burst in these strange times. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's good. And it's nice to come back to Burst. It's now, I think, 10 years since I left. And I'm sure many things have changed, but I think there's one thing that hasn't changed is the strength of radio.
Absolutely, yeah. So before we start, a little bird called LinkedIn tells me that we were actually at university together the first time round, because you went to Exeter, am I right?
Yeah, in another life.
What did you study?
So I originally went into management and business. So I specialised in sort of consumer psychology, organisational behaviour. So I went from that then to looking after customer market insight for a big national retailer, which is very different to what I'm doing now. But yeah, I sort of, my career path is one of, it feels like of me never making my mind up, but I sort of started with some science and then I went into, say, consumer psychology and business and marketing, and did that for a while and learned a large amount of skills and I loved it. But when the credit crunch hit, I decided it wasn't quite for me. And the bits that I found interesting about the job, which was inherently the side about understanding behavioural patterns and why people do what they do, it became less of that. And so I decided that I was going to make a move. And I remember having a very long conversation with my best friend, and I spent a lot of time telling stories at college, and she prompted me to think about that. And I started doing some part-time producing for a hospital radio station. At that point, it was in Hemel Hempstead, when I was working close to London. And bit by bit, the radio bug bit, really. The short story is that after taking some time, I then applied to Bournemouth and did my master's. And that's sort of where I changed directions and then got onto MARP and then went in a media direction.
Okay, so and you were part of the 2009-10 MA Radio production?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. Okay. And what are your memories of your time at Bournemouth?
Do you know what? When I started, and you will find this as well, that coming to go back to university late was having, the first thing was, oh my God, I feel so old. Two, as soon as I started courses was, oh my God, I've got to write academically and I've completely forgotten how to do that. But the nice thing, I think, was starting Bournemouth, the location. Bournemouth as a university is at a wonderful location, and it's not often you get to really do your revision on the beach or wake up after a Saturday evening out in Bournemouth on the beach on a Sunday. But it's a wonderful environment, for basically socialising across courses as well, which is, I think, all adds to the benefit you get from it. But especially with radio, and the MARP course has a reputation, has had a reputation for a long time, and there's what is affectionately known as the MARP, as sort of a community that will always seem to look out for each other, and there's always a camaraderie between people. But that has only been fostered by the people involved in the course. And the MA radio production has always been, there's been two benefits to it. That you get to make and experience a lot of content, and you can get straight into it straight away and be sort of neck deep in it. And that's wonderful. There's nothing better than getting into and understanding the radio industry and media industry as a whole in just making things over and over again. And two, having Burst as a radio station and the grounds it sort of has done, and it keeps evolving, keeps changing the things you can do with that, is just a wonderful safe haven for making really good content. And I probably shouldn't say this as an industry professional, but being able to make content that's unrestricted, and I'm not saying that's just making anything for the sake of it or things of variable quality, That's being able to get things to make things without the confines you've got from a commercial broadcaster or compliance. So you can do things in a sensible, intelligent way, but you can push creative boundaries that you can't always do in the freedom of the outside industry. And that's just, it's a wonderful, wonderful space for that. And I think going from someone who was new to the media industry, just immersing myself in that and having the support and the safety net of practitioners that know about that is wonderful. Just go and make mistakes. That's the biggest thing. And I made lots of mistakes, and there are lots of mistakes that are permanently recorded on digital medium that I'll probably never get away with, and they'll surface on one day. But you have to do that. It's better to make those now than it is when you're on a live broadcast somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say not about your mistakes, but you created you created a lot of pieces for Burst. I've listened to a couple recently.
Oh gosh,
what was your favourite?
Yeah, when I said about the opportunity to make things, I looking back, I don't know. I don't know how many of them actually are still there and survived. And I don't think, but it's funny, different things stay dear to me for different reasons. The thing that I am proudest of, and I'll always have the thing that will always come back to me and beat me up is the thing that is my favourite is the thing I didn't do for my final project. And I wish I had have done. Joe Tyler, who now runs the MA course, will constantly remind me that I should have done that. But I did a panel show, sort of a current affairs panel show that was with a generation theme. So it was called Times Like These, and it was about setting different generations against each other. So we had what was effectively two baby boomers against what would have been Generation X, Y.
Okay.
So just it was about a competition over the ages. And there was just something very lovely of obviously recorded as live, having an audience and doing that sort of format. And it's a very traditional format. There's so many variations of panel shows that they're done both on radio and television. But there was something about making that for our environment and relevant to us at that time. And it was, yeah, that was a lot of fun, really hard. And trying to host a panel show and deal with the ad lib nature of that comedy as well was really quite scary. I don't think I'd acknowledged that until I'd started. And I was really lucky that I'd done a couple of days placement on the news quiz, Ready For News Quiz. So I picked up a few things about how you can preempt that and the way that scripts are written that are adaptable for that sort of format. So I sort of come in prepared, but I had that sort of gung-ho attitude, like, I've got all the preparation, I've got all these clips, and I and a lovely team together that helped put it together on the actual live date we did it. And then you go to record, and then you realise, oh my God, what the hell have I done? There's about 50 people in front of me, and this could go anyway. And afterwards, it takes a lot of editing, and you do a lot more to then only use less in the edit. But it came together really, really well. And it's the one piece I enjoyed all the way through.
Okay. So what did you end up doing for your final project instead?
I did a drama project, and that inherently was the direction I wanted to go in. Drama, I love telling stories. And actually, it's not just drama that you have to tell stories. Radio has the ability, a good story, be it factual or news or drama, is the key to any good content. But with my project, I did a radio sitcom. I can't even remember where how the idea came into being, but it was I don't know whether Creature Comforts is something that's really sort of as recognised now, but it was Plasticine Animals that had voiceover of people that had been interviewed.
Oh yeah.
So I basically wanted to get, actually, what if you got under the skin of if this wasn't that format, it's recorded people dubbed over onto plasticine animals. What about the animals talking? So I wanted to do a sitcom in a zoo to understand what animals' problems were, sort of anthropomorphizing animals. And I bit off a lot more than I can chew. And I had three wonderful writers that put the script together. And there's something really lovely about trying to, not through just the writing, but also the way you record, you direct the actors, the soundscapes, of bringing that to life. Because inherently, the thing about creature comforts is you hear two people being interviewed, but you're seeing an animal. So you completely transpose your thoughts to that animal. Radio, you can't do that. And I thought it'd be wonderful to have that challenge of how do you do that on radio, to really feel like here we are in a pen with pandas and we're talking about the problems of them trying to conceive and how does that. And trying to really give those animals personality. And it was really, really difficult. And I'm glad I did it. And it came out quite well. And that's thanks to the writers and the actors, I think, at the time. But it was a real challenge in trying to push some creative boundaries that you wouldn't normally probably be able to get away with.
No. It sounds like a tough project, but...
Yeah, I can feel my stomach crunch as I am not only trying to get the script right, but also dealing with it in the edit. And I remember I had a really low moment doing it and just trying to pull everything together. And I did basically some creative procrastination. I thought, what can I distract myself away? And I was chatting to one of the people on the sound composer course, and they wanted to do something for part of their portfolio. So I ended up getting them to make a theme tune for the piece. And what they did was wonderful. From what was effectively a very small brief, what they put together, and that perked me up completely. So that was like, that was one of the more exciting bits of it. But yeah, it's I look back at that and I realize all the stuff I probably learned and stuff even now I work in television, but both with radio and TV drama, the things that you take for granted, you don't realise until you get stuck into it.
You graduated in 2010. What have you been up to since?
So immediately afterwards, I started to work for BBC Southwest, BBC West. So I was just working as a broadcast assistant. So I would... be across some of their afternoon talk shows and help out at the breakfast show. And that sort of bit by bit led to then doing a little bit more with travel news and then a little bit more with evenings and weekend shows. And much like any job, I think, it's especially in radio and the industry, that you start off just by helping out that little nugget and being in the right place at the right time or being available to just help. But it's only a little bit. And then you realise that trust builds and then there's a little bit more and then a little bit more, because that's what anyone really wants in our industry, because the time to get things done is increasingly small and the budgets to get things done are increasingly small. So you need people you can trust. So I think it was all about that. And I was doing that through that with the BBC and ended up news reading in their evenings and weekends. Which wasn't what I really planned to do in radio. And again, another set of skills. I wouldn't say I'm a journalist by nature, but naturally, again, storytelling, that those skills will transpose across. And I stayed in that for a while. And then luckily, while I was doing that, I'd received an SRA award for some of the stuff I'd done with Burst and Nerve. And off the back of that, got some work with a children's radio station called Fun Kids. Absolutely wonderful station. Doing what many other broadcast outlets don't really do, and do it in a really creative way. And it's gone from strength to strength, and the people who run it are great. And I had the opportunity to help launch one of their... They had like a magazine show on a Saturday, and they were opening up briefs for content. And script writers I met while I was at Bournemouth and still to this day stay quite good friends with, we decided to just brainstorm, and I had a couple of ideas that I really wanted to cement, and they fleshed those out and came up with a children's drama, radio drama series. And the name of it is Professor Phlegm. And we did 10 episodes of that, thinking it would be an easy job. And again, as with drama, radio drama is never an easy job. There's always, you know, slightly convoluted. So we recorded that again with some really lovely actors, and I think surprised ourselves actually how well that came out to make 10 3-minute episodes. Telling a story in 3 minutes is really, really hard. And then we did the second series of that. And sort of the combination of those two, the stuff I was doing at BBC and that radio drama, I ended up getting onto a place with the BBC production training scheme. And they offer this up every 18 months at that point, it's every year now. And it's a sort of golden plated training scheme that you can sort of fast track through and just be thrown in on productions. And learn across all manners of output, be it online, TV, radio, and just being able to make content for different types of shows. So that was sort of the next big step for me. And off the back of that, I did work for the review show or Newsnight Review in Glasgow, and takes you all over the country. Then did some stuff for drama development, in London, worked for EastEnders, then worked for the BBC Radio 2's breakfast show with Chris Evans, which was one of the most fun radio experiences I think I've ever had, and one of the most tiring. Getting up at stupid o'clock every morning is not my cup of tea, but lot of fun, and I probably look fondly as one of my best radio experiences. And then later, about that, I worked in Wales for a kids show called Wizards vs. Aliens. And that was sort of really my start of my path into drama a bit more. So I, off the back of that, and when I finished the production training scheme, stayed in kids drama and worked across a couple of things for Netflix, for Disney, and for the BBC. And only sort of in the last couple of years, sort of like I've grown up now slightly and I've gone on to do adult drama, and I've just finished on the second series of His Dark Materials.
Would you say this, your career is quite typical of careers in the media production industry? A little bit to this and that, changing a lot?
Naturally, I want to say yes, because everything's exact, but I think I'd be disingenuous to say yes, because I think any career in the media industry is not typical at all. I think there's no real pathway so I think going from a background in science into a career in consumer psychology to radio to TV, I think what is typical is, as you say, you sort of bounce around a few things, and I think you've got to be adaptable. I think there's all genres of media, be it the platform or the actual genre of content, are all quite niche on their own. But if you can't jump back and forth across that, and I think, if anything, the stories you get and the experiences you get from doing that inherently make you a better content maker. So I think, no, it's probably not typical, because I don't think any are typical. But I think in the nature of doing a little bit of everything has proved me very well. And I think it's a good thing for anyone to do.
Sure. And is it mainly freelance? Are you freelance, or is it like contracts, gigs, things like that?
Yeah, I am now. I haven't been. So I've gone from, and the nature of the industry is very, very atypical, but I've gone from having a staff contract with one production company. And then I've gone from fixed term contracts, and then I've gone from sort of job by job contracts. And again, it's that thing about, I was saying earlier, about building trust. Depending on what path you want, freelance gives a certain amount of freedom to be able to jump and do what you want. Obviously, there's also a level of security that doesn't come with that. But similarly, if you are in a place that you're settled and there is a production company that is on your doorstep, going from what may be short fixed-term contracts, building the trust and eventually working in staff position, obviously can bring other benefits. So it's, I think, horses for courses, really. I'm very happy at the moment. Obviously, freelance market in this COVID crisis isn't the most stable, but
no.
As with everyone else, is in the same boat, and things will open up again, and I'm in the position to do that. But I don't intend on changing that anytime soon.
Okay, very good. But you're keeping busy during the lockdown, are you?
Yes. I like to say watching and listening to things.
Research.
Is homework and research, yeah. But I think it's the thing that there's, especially with radio, the wonderful thing about radio is you can make so much of that content remotely.
Yeah.
Some stuff that can't be done, but radio is more adaptable for that reason. And having much smaller teams as well, and it's much quicker turnaround. Television is a little bit more of a big, clunky object that's harder to move. Again, certain types of television is easy to do. Inherently, drama is much more tricky. And I think waiting for those moments of, A, finding the way to do it in current restrictions, and B, being able to still make good content there, and how we work differently, I think is still all to be seen. But there's the broadcasters and the unions are doing lots of good work to try and not only find ways to do it, but find ways of doing it safely.
So what skills did you acquire at Bournemouth that you think have most helped you in your career thus far?
I think an ability to work with others originally. Not that I was a lone wolf before Bournemouth, but creatively with others. And I think it's such a very unique skill set, because the thing I think with creativity means different things to different people, and it probably won't be the most useful of phrase, but it's like opinions. Creative ideas are like arseholes. Everyone has one. And trying to filter and adapt that and do it in a way that's creative, constructive, is really, really difficult. And I think Bournemouth gave me a perfect opportunity to do that. And working across the different disciplines, there, not only have I made a great deal of solid friends that I, to this day, will happily work with at any point and know very closely, but also those links have been able to make brilliant things because of that combined effort. I think it's probably one of the biggest thing. And I think just that and the technical skills, Bournemouth's resources and studios are far, far better than a lot I've used in the industry. And the good thing about radio professionals is you will adapt and you can make anything out of anything. But the ability of being able to cut your teeth on that equipment is wonderful. And the number of mistakes I've made at Bournemouth, from introducing a track by the Manic Street Preachers as the Manic Street Peaches, on a live broadcast, is one that constantly comes back to haunt me when everyone digs out. But it's obviously, that's a comedic example of that. But even just the practicalities of when you lose a recording, or you don't record something, or you've got it on pre-record only, the way of using mics or not hooking up mics, the number of issues you can have when you're trying to run a desk, those sort of things are just, it's practice. It's like riding a bicycle. You've got to do it over and over again and stop falling off. Those studios give you exactly that.
Yeah. And is there anything the course didn't teach you before you started in the industry that maybe you wish it had?
I wish it taught me to have a tougher skin. And it's a very difficult thing, because I don't know how the course would be able to do that. I think I talked to a few universities about this, and I can impart case studies and knowledge and practice about doing things in the industry. But the one sort of the one reality of it is it's really competitive and it's really hard to get into. And people who are probably tick the boxes are you're efficient, you're creatively good and making content, and you're nice to work with. You got those three things, you're sorted and you're fine. It's surprising how many people who don't have that. And but it's you have to have a certain resilience, because especially when you go in to begin with, there's a lot of pushbacks. And there's something about pushbacks that are creative pushbacks that just get under the skin a little bit more. And I think my first couple of years was really trying to understand that and going that actually none of that is personal. That is just the nature of the industry. And you have to, and it's the same whether you're applying for an industry job or you're pitching something or trying to get ideas through commissioning rounds. It's a thankless task at some time. When it happens, it's absolutely wonderful. But you just have to sort of just go, ah, hang on, this isn't me. I just need to move on. What's the next stage and adapt? And I think that's the thing. I don't know whether it could have given me or not. It's, I think that's something that's always a sort of a post-learning that was really useful.
Yeah. So what advice would you give to someone who is starting their career in the radio or even TV, media industries?
I think firstly, know your content. You don't have to like it. You can loathe it. But just watch a lot, listen to a lot. Be aware of the landscape, really. It's hard to watch and listen to everything, and I think I struggle to try and do that when I finished Bournemouth, and you can't do that. I think you sort of have to focus on those things. So you'll watch bad things. Why was it bad? Understand why it was bad. What would you have done differently? Why might they have done it and it's gone in that direction? Just so you can critically think about that stuff, because inevitably when you talk to someone for a job, that's what you're going to end up talking about at some point. And you may not agree with them, but if they can understand that you have that creative criticality, it's gold dust. So I think, yeah, watch and listen to a lot. Talk to a lot of people. It's trying to make contacts now. And not inherently saying, I'm going to contact you because I want a job. Understanding something that you've watched or listened to that you've liked, and just to try and understand and build those networks and bridges, because not inherently you're going to make contact that's going to be able to help with something down the line, but they might know someone who can. And the big thing that one of my mentors at the BBC said to me was, when you're chatting to someone, always try and come away with the name of one or two other people, or get them to put in contact with one or two other people you can talk to. And that has been a real, real gem. That's probably sort of the other second piece of advice. And the third thing is, when you've got the chance to make something, do it. And you won't necessarily end up using it, but there's something about just throwing yourself and trying to make lots of different things, because creativity is an iterative process. And the more chances you've got to try and make things, the better you're going to polish. And it's like drafts of a script. The more you chip away at it, the better they'll become in the end.
How has radio changed since you graduated, and where do you see it going in the future?
Oh gosh. It's when I graduated, it was in a real sort of changing state as it was. So podcasting was something that was sort of coming onto the scene a little bit more. Podcasts were a thing, but they were very much of, here's the BBC podcast for this show. There was inroads into them being their own thing, but it wasn't huge. I think probably very quickly, the first sort of few years after graduating, that's exploded. And it's probably seeing the nature of listening changing. I think podcasting is causing people to listen for longer again. I think podcasting is engaging a slightly different audience, slightly younger audience. And I think it's giving an appetite for people who want to dig deeper into content. I think there you will always get your Radio 4 listeners and you always get your music radio listeners. And I think that's going to be very static, and it'll move back and forth and peaks and troughs through the years as different content, different presenters go through the mix. But I think podcasting is the biggest thing that's changed that. And I think the nature of who those people are who are listening and introducing new audiences. I think it's giving, especially now, it's giving the opportunity to still make new stuff when you haven't got the big restrictions that other broadcast mediums have. And I think radio, I don't think radio is something that's going to die out. I think it's going to continue to evolve and continue to change. As long as you've got cars and you've got car radios, radio will always be a huge thing from that point of view. But podcasting has given it its own life now, and it's given it sort of a breath of fresh air for those who want to listen to different things.
Last question. What's next for Mog? Do you have any projects coming up or any long-term, I don't know, dreams? What do you want to do?
I don't know. Although I'm not doing radio at the moment, it's not something that I've exclusively written myself off. I would at some point like to go back and do some more radio, and especially radio drama. Now I've got my name for myself and I sort of know what I'm doing with drama now. It would be like, and it's a, radio drama is a niche of a niche. It's a very small set of people who operate it. But I think that's something as sort of as I get older, I will want to do something with. I think immediately I'd like to continue to try and do more in sort of the fantasy and genre drama that I'm doing at the moment, because the UK hasn't necessarily been the best at that sort of programming. American networks and Netflix are wonderful at doing that. British networks are a little bit sniffy about it, and a little bit, actually sniffy is probably an unfair word, a little bit risk averse, because we've had a few turkeys in that realm. So I, having just finished on, I'll be slightly biased about it, but a brilliant quality show in that format, I hope that spurs us on to be able to make more of that over here, because inherently, more so with television, I think probably less so with radio, but stuff has to be made for international consumption now. And if we can get a name at making that really well, it'd be great to be able to do more of that. And I think, obviously, going back to the podcasting thing, you're probably more likely to see that sort of production on podcast, because you're not going to get a speech radio station probably taking a risk with that sort of content on a broadcast channel.
Well, Mog, thank you for the interview. It's been great to hear what you're up to, and all the best.
Oh, thank you.